Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and good morning, JJ.
Good morning, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing fine today, and I hope everybody out there in Radio Land is doing well today, this beautiful morning after the storm on May 12th, 2017, here at 9 o'clock in the morning. I love Fridays, and I love mornings for the Master.
And I love you.
I love you too, JJ. And you know what? We've got a really really interesting program today. We're going to be talking about what makes it interesting is not me, but the book of Esther.
But you are interesting.
Oh, well, you know, I've heard that before. An interesting character, I guess. Before we get with the Bible lesson today, which is going to be setting in the book of Esther, if you want to go ahead and get your Bibles out for that. Also, we want to encourage you to promote the program today with your social media. Call a friend, text a friend, email a friend, post it on your Facebook. But we're right here live on TGRN.org, and we want you to spread the word about that today and generate some more interest, not just to our program, but the Mornings for the Master and all the other wonderful resources. When was the last time that you got onto TGRN and perused all the different radio programs on the website?
I did it accidentally a couple of weeks ago.
Well, that's a neat accident, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally.
I was trying to find what our topic was one time and was going through all the stuff, and it's like there are a lot of shows.
In it, it's a treasure trove, really. And I, in fact, I use the TuneIn Radio app on my phone to use the, you know, to get the station.
And you have it on your Roku.
And I listen to two programs on Sunday mornings. We have a program by Cody Westbrook, the Word of Life radio program that is broadcasted out of Boston, is also aired on TGRN, and then there's a brother up in Oak Grove, Missouri that usually does a short radio program about some aspect of the of one of the acts of worship, and so kind of gets you into a worshipful mood. Jack McNeil.
He does a show. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Jack McNeil.
He just asked on Facebook if anybody knew any good congregations around Broken Bow, Oklahoma. I was like,
absolutely.
Yes, I do know of one. Anthony Warren's in Broken Bow, Oklahoma.
I think they are the congregation in Broken Bow.
Oh, yeah, they are, and they're also solid. That's a good plus, too. So.
All right. Well, so a few announcements before we begin today. Gospel meeting time over at the Blanchard Church of Christ. Blanchard is a little community over there near Shreveport. It's between Shreveport and Jefferson on the line. And they'll be having a gospel meeting May 14th through the 17th. So I guess it starts this next week with Don Blackwell. Don Blackwell is...
I've never heard of him. Who is he?
Well, you know, he's probably more known for his work with the World Video Bible School, mm-hmm. and he's the host for the video series, The Truth About, which you can go online to thetruthabout.net and see a host of moral issues that are being dealt with there. And he is also one of the, I guess he is the preaching minister, or one of the preaching ministers for the South Haven Church of Christ in South Haven, Mississippi. And it also says that he serves as one of the elders. And so he'll be holding this gospel meeting May 4th.
He's the head of GBN.
Oh, you know what? He's the executive director. That's right. He is. And so anyway, there's a full write up on this flyer here. If you'd like to obtain a copy from us, just write us and let us know. We'll send this out to you. But the theme for the gospel meeting is God give us Christian homes. Redefining the home, repenting the right way, proverbs for child rearing, pornography destroys homes, God hates divorce, and kindness begins at home. So all very good thought-provoking topics. I wish I'd be around to be able to go to it.
It'd be nice.
What's next?
May 18th to the 21st, the church that Jesus built will be out at East Mountain, right outside of Gilmer, Texas. It's going to be Benjamin and David McCain, father-son combo. And lessons are over distinctiveness, being costly, destined for heaven, benevolent, committed to preaching the truth and love, and united in the Lord's work. So East Mountain Church of Christ will be a good gospel meeting. You got David's Shoemate, Hal Roper, and Chip Horton leading the singing in different nights, not the same night. But if you'd like to go to that, that is 510 Main Street in Gilmer, Texas. And like I said, that is outside of Gilmer in what is known as East Mountain. Also, May 28th to the 31st, John Ratliff, preacher with Prescott, Arkansas, is going to be at the Emory Church of Christ doing a gospel meeting on reviving our passion. And John will do a very good job with that. We need to have him on the show to promote that at some point. I like John.
It'd be great.
So it would be good to have him. Now, we are going to get into the meat of our show today. Got through everything, got through the announcements and all that in, I think, record time. So going to be able to jump into the book of Esther, one of the only books of the Bible that doesn't talk about God directly.
Yeah, and you know, this has been a source of contention for some people, maybe mostly critics, scholars of the Bible, and you know, wondering whether or not it should be put into, you know, the canon of Scripture because of that. But it's really not a question for the Jewish people. In fact, Esther was part of five books that were put together in one scroll at one time. It was lumped together with the Song of Solomon, with Ruth, Lamentations, and Ecclesiastes. And Esther has traditionally been read at the Feast of Purim, which is the commemoration of the great deliverance of the Jews that God brought about through Esther. And so, you know, that was a new feast that was generated as a result of Esther's work. And, you know, the Jews just didn't go around making up feasts. This particular book is included in the canon of Scripture, and for no other reason other than it illustrates so very clearly the providence of God and His care for His people. Some other interesting notes about this is, you know, Ahasuerus, or Xerxes, was never beyond the control of God. I want you to know, this is something we learn in Daniel and other books of the Bible, and that is every king, every leader is always under the authority of God Almighty. He raises them up, he takes them out, he is in control. And we never need to doubt that. And so it was impossible then that Haman would be able to carry out his dreadful intentions while God was protecting his people. If God had withdrawn his protection, then, yeah, he would have been able to do his wicked plan. But because God was involved, somehow, some way, we don't understand exactly the mechanics of how it all fell together, but it just worked out. And I think it's interesting. You know, that to me is more impressive than a miracle that defies the laws of nature, is to see human will working together with the laws of nature and just seeing everything work out the way God wants it to. It just is so much more impressive to me because it seems more complicated, I think. But nothing's too hard for God. And the fact that Esther asked the Jews residing in the capital city to fast in this book demonstrates that she was relying on God's grace to resolve a desperate situation. That is a little piece of instruction there that a lot of times people are overlooking. Also, I would say this, that the Persian Empire was so big. It was so big, so huge, and especially under Ahasuerus. And did you know that his kingdom extended from India to Ethiopia?
I did not know that.
You know, virtually all the Jews lived within this area at this time. And this gives us some hint that Judaism, you know, spread down to Ethiopia. We know that because of the Ethiopian eunuch that comes up in Acts chapter 8. Mm-hmm. And so that explains why he's coming. I mean, you see, even then, the providence of God was working ahead of time. to scatter the Jews. They'd all still come back for the Feast of Pentecost. And that Pentecost after the resurrection of the Lord, all these Jews were gathered together from every nation under heaven, Acts chapter 2 says. And there it is that they received the gospel. And what did they do with that gospel? They took it back home. And that was just an amazing orchestration of events. And who could not say but that this was God's plan? Well, let's get into the text this morning, and we're introduced to Queen Vashti, which I have a lot of respect for, by the way. I don't know what her religion was, but she had a moral principle here that she lived by, and she took a stand, and she paid the price for doing the right thing, didn't she?
Mm-hmm.
What does your text say?
All right. Where are you wanting to start?
Let's start in verse 1.
The very beginning, a very good place to start. Now, in the days of Ahasuerus, how do we say that?
Well, I don't know. I say Ahasuerus.
Ahasuerus. I was trying to say that. Ahasuerus.
I mean, that may be different for other people,
that's
too.
That's what I was trying to get to, and I looked at it, and for some reason I was putting the wrong emphasis on the wrong syllable.
That was a good movie.
Now, in the days of Ahasuerus, the Ahasuerus who reigned from India to Ethiopia over 127 provinces, in those days when King Ahasuerus sat in the royal throne in Susa, the capital, in the third year of his reign, he gave a feast for all the officials and servants. The armies of Persia and Media and the nobles and governors of the provinces were before him. While he showed the riches of his royal glory and the splendor and pomp of the great of his greatness for many days, 180 days.
That's a lot of show and tell there, isn't it?
It is a lot. And when these days were completed, the king gave for all the people present in Susa the citadel, both great and small, at feast lasting 7 days in the court of the garden of the king's palace. There were white cotton curtains and violet hangings fastened with cords of fine linen and purple to silver rods and marble pillars, and also couches of gold and silver on a mosaic pavement of porphyry, marble, mother of pearl, and precious stones.
You know, it's kind of hard to believe they had all this beautiful stuff back then. We always think of this time period. I mean, we always think about people in the past, and we think of dirt floors.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's just amazing to me that we've had luxurious stuff throughout history, haven't we? Mm-hmm. People have harnessed this and used it.
Oh, yeah. At verse 7, drinks were served in golden vessels and vessels of different kinds. The royal wine was lavished according to the bounty of the king, and drinking was according to this edict. There is no compulsion, for the king had given orders to all the staff of his palace to do as each man desired. Queen Vashti also gave a feast for the woman in the palace that belonged to King Ahasuerus.
You know, I've always thought that was interesting that there was some freedom there to drink what they wanted to. Was that unusual? I mean, was this something unusual that he gave them freedom? There was no compulsion to drink. Was it usually the case that it was compulsory to drink the alcohol? I'm not sure. I just find it amazing that it mentions this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is indicative of something, and it seems like it would be like out of the norm. But I need to study that further. But that is a point that I would want to look into a little bit more. But Vashti the queen made a feast for the women, verse number 9, in the royal house, which belonged to King Ahasuerus. And verse number 10 says, on the seventh day, when the heart of the king was merry. Now, what does yours say in verse number 10?
On the seventh day, when the heart of the king was merry.
So it's the same thing. I think that, you know, 7 days of partying would probably have, you know, mellowed him out a little bit. I'm just guessing here. He was merry with wine, mine says. What does yours say?
Merry with wine.
All right, so he's kind of like, I think he's under the influence here, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
And he commanded Mehuman, Biztha, Harbona, Bigtha, Abagtha, Zethar, and Carcass, the 7 chamberlains that served in the presence of King Ahasuerus, to bring Vashti, the queen, before the king with the royal crown. Or mine says, with the crown royal. What does yours say?
Royal crown.
The King James actually says the crown royal.
Crown Royale.
Yeah, not to be confused with the product. Anyway, to show the people and the princes her beauty, for she was fair to look upon. Now, there's no doubt. You know, he was showing off everything he had, and now he brings out this trophy wife to show her off.
Some believe that what this could mean is that she was going to wear the crown, and that's all she was going to wear.
You know, there's a lot of commentaries that allude to this, that there was some very corrupt thinking going on behind this, and I think that the text is kind of clean, you know. But there was a refusal on Queen Vashti's part there in verse number 12 to come to the at the king's commandment by her chamberlains. Therefore was the king very angry, and his anger burned in him. Then the king said to the wise men, which knew the times, for so was the king's manner toward all that knew the law. I want to stop right there, because there was somebody down at Focal Point this last week was preaching on this. And the question came up in one of those hashtag statements, and here's basically, here it is. How corrupt do you have to be as a husband to allow other men to lust after your wife?
Yeah.
To parade your wife in a lustful way. I mean, who would do that? That is beyond comprehension. I mean, that just goes to show you how drunk he was. He was not thinking straight.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, alcohol compromises your morals. I mean, it to absolutely gets you into a state of mind where you cannot think straight.
That's why guys buy girls drinks.
To lower their senses.
Lower their senses. It may be a little crude, but they say candy is dandy, but liquor is quicker. It's because alcohol causes you to lose your inhibitions.
Inhibitions, yeah. I think that we need to say this repeatedly, because there may be somebody out there in the world that's searching that does not know the truth on this. But it's at, you know, I had a neighbor up in Sedalia, Missouri, that called all alcohol ignorant oil. He's on the ignorant oil. And I thought it was a good, because it makes you it puts you in a stupid state. You do things.
My father-in-law calls it brain remover.
Brain remover. Yeah.
It does kill brain cells.
Why does anybody want to socially imbibe, you know, and they say, well, it's okay even in modest, you know, just modest, or, you know, what do they call it, just moderation amounts, and you know, you're just toying with this stuff. I mean, it's, well, anyway, there's so much negative about it in the Bible. It's like, why would you even want to, you know, play with it in moderation? But anyway,
why you want to get as close to sin as you possibly can?
Possibly can. Yeah.
Sense.
Anyway, so basically she refuses. And in verse number 14, verse number 15, starting verse number 15. What shall we do to the queen Vashti according to the law, because she has not performed the commandment of the king Ahasuerus by the chamberlains? And Memucan answered before the king and the princes, Vashti the queen has not done wrong. Now he takes a stand for her. He stands up for her. Memucan says the queen has not done wrong to the king. Oh, well, I'm sorry. He takes a stand against her is what it is. She's not only done wrong to the king, but also to the princes and to all the people that are in all the provinces. And it makes her insubordination is all they're concerned about. And in verse number 17, for this deed of the queen shall come abroad unto all women, so that they shall despise their husbands in their eyes when it shall be reported. And so the news of this is going to get out, and other women are going to follow suit. It's going to set a bad example. It'll be bad for all men everywhere, man.
Oh, yeah, man. It'd be awful.
Anyway, so what happens next?
I already know what happens next. I just got to find the scripture.
18.
18. This very day, the noble women of Persia and Media who have heard the queen's behavior will say to the people and officials, there will be contempt and wrath and plenty. If it please the king, let a royal order go out from him, and let it be written among the laws of the Persians and the Medes, so that it may not be repealed, that Vashti is never again to come before King
Ahasuerus, and let the king give her royal position to another one who is better than she. So when the decree made by the king is proclaimed throughout all the kingdom, for it is vast, all women will give honor to their husbands, high and low alike. And the advice pleased the king and the princes, and the king did as Memucan proposed. He sent out letters to all the royal provinces, to every province in its own script, and to every person in its own language, that every man be master of his own household and speak according to the language of his people. So then after that, we're going to see Esther being chosen as the queen.
So I think it's interesting because, you know, in the rule, the Persian rule here is like when a law is made, it cannot be undone, can it?
Yeah.
And so to kind of set an example, they made an example out of her.
It's also good they wrote that because it kind of foreshadows a little bit into the future.
Yeah.
So,
well, I think it's amazing that they would expect her to do what she was going to do. She objects. She's willing to pay the price. And I'm sure that there were other people who criticized her for taking her stand. Look at this rule that's been made just because you wouldn't do what you were supposed to do. You know, can you imagine the ridicule that she would have? I mean, very rarely does the consequence just end at the, you know, in an immediate way. It always kind of has a way to extend out past there. I mean, what became of her after this? The Bible didn't say, but I imagine life was not easy because of this choice.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, God probably could have taken care of her, too. So,
mm-hmm.
Anyway, we start in verse number 2, and what does it say?
Then the king's young men who attended him said, "Let the beautiful young virgins be sought out for the king, and let the king appoint officers in all the provinces of his kingdom to gather all the beautiful young virgins to the harem in Susa, the capital, under custody of Haggai, the king's eunuch, who is in charge of the women. Let their cosmetics be given them, and let the young woman who pleases the king be queen instead of Vashti." And this pleased the king, and he did so. Now there was a Jew in Susa, the citadel, whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jair, son of Shimei, son of Kish, a Benjamite, who had been carried away from Jerusalem among the captives, carried away with Jeconiah, king of Judah, from whom Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, had carried away. And he was bringing up Hadassah, that is Esther, the daughter of his uncle, for she had neither father nor mother. The young woman had a beautiful figure and was lovely to look at. And when her father and mother died, Mordecai took her as his own daughter. So when the king's order and his edict were proclaimed, and when many young women were gathered in Susa, the citadel, in custody of Haggai, Esther was also taken into the king's palace and put in custody of Haggai, who had charge of the women. And the young woman pleased him and won his favor, and he quickly provided her, the young woman, having trouble with my contacts this morning. And the young woman pleased him and won his favor, and he quickly provided her with her cosmetics and her portion of food, and with 7 young women from the king's palace, and advanced her and her young women to the best in the harem. Esther had not made known her people or kindred, for Mordecai had commanded her not to make it known. And every day Mordecai walked in front of the court of the harem to learn how Esther was and what was happening to her.
So it was important, as she was being chosen, not to volunteer the information that she was Jewish.
Right.
That could ruin the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, so what happens next?
Now when the turn came for each young woman to go to King Ahasuerus after being 12 months under the regulations for the women, since this was the regular period of their beautifying, 6 months with oil and myrrh, and 6 months with spices and ointments for women. When the young woman went to the king in this way, she was given whatever she desired to take with her from the harem to the king's palace. In the evening she would go in, and in the morning she would return to the second harem in custody of Sheshagaz, the king's eunuch, who was in charge of the concubines. She would not go in to the king again unless the king delighted in her and she was summoned by name. And when the turn came for Esther, the daughter of Abihail, the uncle of Mordecai, who had taken her as his own daughter, to go into the king, she asked for nothing except what Haggai, the king eunuch, who had charge of the women, advised. Now Esther was winning favor in the eyes of all who saw her. And when Esther was taken to King Ahasuerus into the royal palace in the 10th month, which is the month of Tebeth, in the 7th year of his reign, the king loved Esther more than all the other women, and she won grace and favor in his sight more than all the virgins, so that he set the royal crown on her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. And then the king gave a great feast for all his officials and servants. It was Esther's feast. He also gained a remission of taxes to the provinces and gave gifts with royal generosity.
So what do you think he liked it better? Do you think it was just a beauty thing for him, or do you think that there were other qualities that he had learned about her up to this point? Probably just the visual aspect, wasn't it? Because he really hadn't spent that much time with her. I mean, she'd been in preparation for how many months?
A year.
Yeah. And so she smelled good, by the way.
Yeah, I had to have with 6 months worth of myrrh and stuff and then 6 months of ointments specifically for women. So, I mean, she had to have smelled delightful and her skin had to have been perfect.
Right.
And she was – and there's some people that you're around them and you just immediately want to be around them more. I mean, so it's one of those deals that could have been she was like one of those people. And, you know, sometimes being pretty is kind of life on easy mode. Where guys like me, it's on difficult. But, you know, video games, you have easy and difficult and hard. Well, if you're good looking, sometimes you're playing on easy. So she seemed to be a good person as well as pretty, and that ended up resonating with the king.
Well, you bring up some good points there, and I'm still amazed and marveled how you know. And Mordecai kind of uses his influence here as well, and he's got this kind of he's like, okay, don't. I think Mordecai knows the potential of what this means, because even when Esther, you know, even though she has the ability to talk to the king, Mordecai is going to lay it on her later and is going to say, look, if you don't use this to help your people, you know, if you don't use your influence, you know,
you're going to get found out.
Yeah.
And you're going to get killed too.
Yeah. So if you're going to get killed anyway, you might as well use it for the good, right?
Right.
So I think Mordecai has some, you know, he's got some brains here, and he's willing to use, you know, when God opens a door, you need to walk through it.
Yeah, and Mordecai was the name I suggested for our son.
I'm not going to get into that.
Mordecai Hendricks, how powerful is that?
Like I said, you know, this is great. I'm. By the way, y'all are due here anytime soon.
Any day now.
Yeah, I'm thinking of that song.
I was born over in Turkey.
Any day now.
And, you know, you have different phrases in different countries.
Mm-hmm.
And the phrase that, because they kept asking when I was going to get there. And the doctor looked at my parents and said, when the fruit is ripe, it will drop.
Well, there you go.
When the time is ripe, the baby will come.
All right. So, now in chapter 3, we're introduced to a wicked plot, Haman's wicked plot. Everybody knows the name of Haman from Esther.
I did not suggest Haman Hendricks.
That's good.
I did not.
Yeah, that's you know, that's a wise decision that you made not to suggest it. So after these things, King Ahasuerus did promote a guy by the name of Haman. He was the son of Hammedatha. He was the Agagite. And advanced him and set his seat above all the princes that were with him. And all the king's servants that were in the king's gate bowed and reverenced Haman. Now, Haman likes that. He likes that respect. He likes to have the honor and the glory. And for the king had so commanded concerning him, but Mordecai did not bow to him in reverence. He wouldn't do it. And this got, I mean, it was like a thorn in Haman's flesh, Mordecai was, because he just couldn't stand that he did not bow down. He just, that's his big fat hairy deal. If he would have just done that, you know, he would probably not have as much problem with him. But Mordecai's not going to do that. He's not a compromiser. And the king's servants, which were in the king's gate, said, Mordecai, why transgressest thou the king's commandment? Why did you break the king's rule? You know you got to bow down to this guy. Why did you? That's stupid. They're probably criticizing him. What you're just asking for trouble, man. Mm-hmm. That came to pass when they spoke daily to him And he hearkened not to them. He's not going to listen to them. There were people who would come to him day after day, try to reason with him. Mm-hmm. And he was like, nope, I'm not going to do it. Then they told Haman to see whether Mordecai's matters would stand, for he had told them that he was a Jew. All right, so now that leaks out. All right. And when Haman saw that Mordecai bowed not, nor did reverence to him, then Haman was full of wrath. And he thought scorn to lay hands on Mordecai alone, for he had showed him the people of Mordecai before. Wherefore Haman sought to destroy all the Jews. All right, so now it's not just Mordecai. He wants to destroy all the Jews for Mordecai's sake. They're just problematic, okay, in his mind. And there's only one problem. To destroy all the Jews, you got to destroy the king's wife. You got to destroy Esther. And so in the first month, which is the month of Nisan, the 12th year of King Ahasuerus, they cast Pur, all right, P-U-R, Pur, that is the lot, that they're casting lots before Haman from day to day and from month to month to the 12th month, that is the month of Adar. That's a significant verse right there because this is going to be based on the Feast of Purim, okay, this date right here, all right. Then Haman said to Ahasuerus, this is a certain people, there is a certain people scattered abroad. Now, why didn't he just say, hey, look, we need to get rid of these Jews? He said, oh, there's a certain people dispersed among the people in all the provinces of thy kingdom, and their laws are different from all people. Neither keep they the king's laws. Now, that's kind of a generality because that's not true.
They kept their law, but they also obeyed the law of the land.
They did. Therefore, it is not for the king's profit to allow them to be here. All right? So, if it please the king, let it be written that it may be that they may be destroyed, and I will pay 10,000 talents of silver to the hands of those. Why? Is, you know, he's really invested in this thing. He's like, you know, he didn't even need to do this. All he's got to do is let the king make his decree, and then it's done. But now he's willing to pay 10,000 talents of silver to the hands of those who have the charge of this business. So that's like blood money right there. Mm-hmm. And to bring it, I'm going to pay you, king, to make this law. This is a bribe. That's what this is. He's bribing the king. He's like, look, there's people in here in your land that are going to make you trouble. They're going to make trouble for you. Let me pay you to get rid of them. I was like, he doesn't even need to do that if the king trusts him. But he's willing to go above and beyond, and he's going to pay to have them eradicated. And the king took his ring from his hand and gave it to Haman, the son of Hammedatha the Agagite, the Jews' enemy. And the king said to Haman, the silver is given to thee, the people also, to do with them as it seemeth good to thee. So, you know, I'm going to let you be in charge of it. Then were the king's scribes called on the 13th day of the month, and there was written according to all that Haman had commanded the king's lieutenants and to the governors that were over every province and the rulers. All right. So this was a rule that was etched in stone with the king's ring. Letters were brought to all the different posts and all the provinces to destroy, kill, and cause to perish all Jews, both young and old, children, little children and women, in one day, even upon the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar. All right. So that's the plan. All right. What happens next in chapter 4?
Chapter 4, we see that Esther agrees to help the Jews. And Mordecai learned all that had been done, and Mordecai tore his clothes and put on sackcloth and ashes, and went out into the midst of the city, and he cried out with a loud and bitter cry. He went up to the entrance of the king's gate, for no one was allowed to enter the king's gate, clothed in sackcloth. Why do you think that was?
Well, that's a good question. You know, it looks like that he is protesting the decision. And you know, that's when you're in mourning, that's the type of clothes you wear, right?
Right. Mourning. So in every province, wherever the king's command and his decree reached, there was great mourning among the Jews, and fasting and weeping and lamenting, and many of them lay in sackcloth and ashes. In verse 4, when Esther's young women and her eunuchs came and told her the queen was deeply distressed, she sent garments to clothe Mordecai so that he might take off his sackcloth, but he would not accept them. Then Esther called for Hathach, one of the king's eunuchs, who had been appointed to attend her, and ordered her to go to Mordecai to learn what was and why it was. Hathach went to Mordecai in the open square of the city in front of the king's gate, and Mordecai told him all that had happened to him and the exact sum of money that Haman had promised to pay into the king's treasuries for the destruction of the Jews. Mordecai also gave him a copy of the written decree issued in Susa for their destruction, that he might show it to Esther and explain it to her, and command her to go to the king to beg her favor and plead with him on the behalf of her people. And Hathach went and told Esther what Mordecai had said. And then Esther spoke to Hathach and commanded him to go to Mordecai and say, "All the king's servants and all the people of the king's provinces know that if any man or woman goes to the king inside the inner court without being called, there is but one law to be put to death, except the one to whom the king holds out the golden scepter so that he may live. But as for me, I have not been called to come into the king these 30 days." You know, what we were talking about earlier is if the king was pleased with someone, he would call him back.
Yeah.
If he hadn't called her in 30 days, could that have been messing with her mind as well to think, maybe I've fallen out of favor? And that could mean that this was an even bigger risk on her part, that she hadn't seen him in 30 days. So I never really thought about this, but this could have been an even bigger risk for her to come back.
That is true. No one ever caught that before. And, you know, it's like, I just pray that he holds out the golden scepter to me when I come in. Because, you know, if that doesn't happen, you're dead.
Yeah.
So, all right.
You want me to keep going?
Do you want to keep going?
I would like to keep
going. Okay, go ahead.
And they told Mordecai what Esther had said. Then Mordecai told them to reply to Esther, "Do not think to yourself that in the king's palace you will escape any more than all the other Jews. For if you keep silent this time, relief and deliverance will rise for the Jews from another place. But you and your father's house will perish. And who knows whether you've not come to the kingdom for such a time as this."
Now notice what Mordecai says. He says the deliverance is going to come to the Jews. That's not a question in Mordecai's mind. It's whether or not Esther and her household wants to live. You know, if you want to live and be part of God's plan, great. If you don't, you can cut yourself off, but God's going to deliver the people.
Yeah, the Jews are going to survive. It's been promised. It's been prophesied. It's going to
happen. You can either be part of this plan or not. And I think that is so telling, man. That is like, this is the problem with a lot of Christians today, is we have been promised victory in Jesus. We can do what it is that God expects us to do. We can live righteous life. Any tough decision that we've got to make, we can do it knowing that we will ultimately win. We can either be part of the victory or we can be not a part of the victory, but the Christians are going to be victorious. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to happen. And so whether we want to be part of the big plan, you know, God can use us. If not, fine, it'll come from someplace else. And this is what I've always said, you know, even on the negative side of things, you know, you look at Judas, for instance. You know, some people say, well, you know, it was prophesied that Judas would betray Jesus. Okay, yeah, that's right. It was prophesied that somebody would betray Jesus for 30 pieces of silver. It's true that God knew that Judas would do that. But let's say that Judas didn't want to do that. You know what? Somebody else would have. And it would have been for 30 pieces of silver, and he would have gone out and hanged himself and would have been buried in Potter's Field and all that good stuff. I mean, it would have fallen into place just like it was prophesied. But I think it's important for the listeners to know God's plan will be done whether or not you want to be part of that plan or not. It's not going to affect God's plan. God's will be done with or without you. But here's an opportunity to be part of the big plan. Do we want to get in on it or not? That's the question. Do we want to be in on it or not? That's all that we have to ask ourselves. And so I'm amazed and marveled about that. Anyway, you get into chapter 5, and there's this huge banquet. And it came to pass on the third day that Esther put her royal apparel on and stood in the inner court of the king's house, over against the king's house. And the king sat upon his royal throne in the royal house and over against the gate of the house. And it was so, when the king saw Esther the queen standing in the court, that she obtained favor in his sight, and the king held out the golden scepter. That was in his hand. So Esther drew near and touched the top of the scepter, I didn't remember that fact before she touched the tops of the scepter. That's pretty cool. And then said unto the king, what wilt thou, Queen Esther? What do you want? What can I do for you? What is it your request? And it shall be given unto thee the half of the kingdom. You know, so he's willing to do whatever she wants, right?
Well, he was still pretty smitten with her.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Esther answered, if it seems good unto the king, let the king and Haman come this day unto a banquet that I have prepared for him. And so the king said, cause Haman to make haste that he may do as Esther has said. So the king and Haman came to the banquet that Esther had prepared. And the king said unto Esther at the banquet of wine, what is thy petition? And it shall be granted thee. And what is the request? So he knows there's something else besides just inviting him to a party. He's perceptive enough to know there's something else. Isn't that cool? Mm-hmm. It wasn't just like, hey, we're going to have a party. I want you to come. That's why I've come here today. You would risk your life over a party?
Yeah.
No, there's got to be something bigger than that. So I think he knows. All right, and he's reassuring her, even to the half of the kingdom it shall be performed. Then Esther answered and said, my petition and my request is this. If I have found favor in the sight of the king, and if it pleases the king to grant my petition and to perform my request, let the king and Haman come to the banquet that I shall prepare for them, and I will do tomorrow as the king has said. Then went Haman forth that day joyful. Oh, he was so pumped. He was been invited with a part to this party. He had a glad heart, but when Haman saw Mordecai in the king's gate, he didn't stand up nor moved for him, for he was filled with indignation against Mordecai. And Haman refrained himself, and he came home, and he sent and called for his friends and Zeresh, his wife, and Haman told them the glory of his riches and the magnitude of the multitude of his children and all the things wherein the king had promoted him and how he had been advanced above. And so I didn't realize they didn't already know all this. I guess he's been away from his family for a little while since the time of his promotion, but he's going back and he's telling them about all this stuff that the king has done. And he said, and Esther the queen did let no man come in with the king into the banquet that she had prepared but myself. In other words, he thinks, oh, man, Queen Esther's really, you know, really promoted me because I'm the only other guy that got to go into that banquet, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm invited to come to this party tomorrow with the king. Yet all this availeth me nothing so long as I see Mordecai. You know, and all this good stuff that's happening is just not good enough because until I see Mordecai die, I'm not going to be a happy camper. Mm-hmm. I think there's another lesson in all this. And, you know, it kind of shows you that there's some people who don't have thankful hearts. You can give them the whole world. And one thing can be out of kilter. One thing might not be going their way. And every other blessing that God has given them is nothing. Because they're so selfish about this one thing that it just ruins their day. And it's like, how could Mordecai get under his crawl that bad that all this other stuff that he's been given, all this other stuff that he thinks he has, holds no joy for him? And so Zeresh, his wife, and his friend said unto him, let a gallows be made 50 cubits high, and tomorrow speak unto the king that Mordecai may be hanged thereon. And so that's where the idea came from. It came from his wife. He's like, man, if this is bothering you so bad, just kill the guy. Let a gallows be made. Make a public execution out of this. And so here we are in chapter 6. The king honors Mordecai. And you remember how this went down? You remember how all this went down?
It was the king couldn't sleep. So he's like, hey, bring out the books. Read to me all the good things that have happened. And gets to Mordecai. And
I mean, this is some serious, like, I can't sleep. This is some serious, you know, and so bring all the chronicles out mm-hmm. and read them to me.
And interestingly enough, people read chronicles now and it puts them to sleep. So it's kind of flip-flopping.
Right. And so in reading the chronicles, he finds out
different,
about the
different chronicles.
Yeah, different chronicles. This was the Persian chronicles, right? And so he finds out that Mordecai had saved his life. He exposed a wicked plot before. And come to find out that he had not been rewarded. What has been done to reward this guy? And they're like, well, nothing. And so like, well we're going to have to fix that.
Yeah, we got to get this taken care of.
All right. So what happens next?
So- So we end up finding that the feast happens, or they calls no, that's not it. That's not it. So the king, we're going to find, honors Mordecai, and he says all this stuff about we need to do something great for somebody who is great. What do you think we should
do? And he doesn't know he's talking about Mordecai. And, so,
and Haman thinks that the king is talking about him, so he's like, I think you should parade him around the city.
Put on your royal robe and crown and
all this. Well, who
on
is
the royal horse.
The guy you made the most. What?
Yeah, let it be done unto the man in whom the king delighteth to honor. Verse number 12. And so Mordecai came again to the king's gate, but Haman hasted to his house mourning, having his head covered. Oh, when he found out what had happened, he was just devastated. He was so embarrassed. In chapter 7, justice is served. So the king and Haman came to the banquet that Esther the queen had made, and the king said to Esther on the second day, what is your request? And Esther says in verse number 3, if I have found favor in the sight, O king, and if it please the king, let my life be given at my petition and my people at my request. For we were sold, I and my people, to be destroyed. All right, she's talking about what Haman had done here. Mm-hmm. All right, to be slain and to perish. But if we had been sold for bondmen or bondwomen, I had held my tongue, although the enemy could not countervail the king's damage. All right. Then King Ahasuerus answered and said unto Esther the queen, who is he and where is he? And Esther says, the adversary and enemy is this wicked Haman. And what does Haman do? He's freaked out.
Yeah, he gets real scared.
He's so scared, he's begging for his life.
Did he know that she was a Jew?
Probably not, yeah.
He probably didn't know the relationship of her and Mordecai either. So
while the king was out in the garden, you know, he'd gotten kind of mad. He went out to the
mad. He rose in his wrath.
Yeah, he's going out to the garden to chill out, and Haman, in his nervousness and his attempt to be forgiven by Esther, falls upon the bed, and the king comes back in and he sees it, and it looks like he's trying to be
assault her.
And the king says in verse number 8, will he force the queen also before me in the house? So it looks bad. As the word went out of the king's mouth, they covered Haman's face. In other words, they're taking him to the gallows.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So back to this idea, there's a law that's been passed that you can't undo. Haman got this law passed that all the Jews shall be destroyed. Mm-hmm. All right. You can't change the law, and the law wasn't changed just because Haman was found guilty.
Right.
So what's the fix?
The fix is to say the Jews can defend themselves.
And when God before you, who can be against you? And so again, you know, they had a lot of people against them, but it is nothing compared to going up against the hand of the Lord. And this is where this is all part of the providence. Every step of the way, this is all falling into place. And God, you know, and Mordecai knows that God is going to deliver them. Mordecai is absolutely certain. He's so certain that he says, with or without your help, Esther, we'll be delivered. All right? The plans may change, but right now you have something you can do about this. So in chapter 8, on the day that the king Ahasuerus give the house of Haman, the Jews' enemy, unto Queen Esther, and Mordecai came before the king, Esther had told what he was unto her. Now, that is, she explained the relationship between the two. And the king took off his ring when he had taken from Haman and gave it to Mordecai. Now, Mordecai is in the place of Haman.
Mm-hmm.
And Esther set Mordecai over the house of Haman. And Esther spake yet again before the king, and fell down at his feet, besought him with tears, put away the mischief of Haman and the Agagite, and his device that he had devised against the Jews. And then the king held out the golden scepter towards her, again in approval, right? So Esther rose and stood before the king and said, now this is twice she risked her life coming before the king. He holds out the golden scepter. What do you want me to do? If it please the king, and if I found favor in your sight, if the things seem right before the king, if I be pleasing in his eyes, notice how she addresses him. You know, she's not just coming out. She's kind of building up to it, right? This is humility. Let it be written to reverse the letters devised by Haman, the son of Hammedatha the Agagite, which he wrote to destroy all the Jews. For how can I endure to see the evil that shall come to my people? And verse 7 says, Then the king Ahasuerus told Esther, I have given Esther the house of Haman, and him they have hanged upon the gallows, because they laid his hand upon the Jews. Write ye also for the Jews, as it liketh you in the king's name, and seal it with the king's ring, for the writing which is written in the king's name and sealed with the king's ring, no man can reverse. Then were the king's scribes called at the time, and they wrote this letter in different languages too, from India to Ethiopia, 127 provinces, all right, in all the languages, all right. In verse number 11, it says, Wherein the king granted the Jews which were in every city to gather themselves together and to stand for their life, to destroy, to slay, and to cause to perish all the power of the people and the province that would assault them, both little ones and women, and to take the spoil of the prey. Upon one day in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus, namely upon the 13th day of the 12th month in the month of Adar. The copy of the writing for a commandment was to be given in every province and was published to all the people. All right, so that covers this chapter. They are given by the king the ability to defend themselves. And what happens in chapter 9 on the 12th month in the month of Adar on the 13th day? Well, the Bible tells us that there went a decree, a commandment from the king. His decree drew near to be put into execution. In other words, they were going to make war on the Jews. And it says, In the day the enemies of the Jews hoped to have power over them, though it was turned to the contrary, the Jews had rule over them that hated them. That is a parenthetical concept that was put in there. It's written in the past tense.
What we end up also seeing is they kill 500 men. And then in verse 11, I think this is interesting, or verse 12, the king said to Queen Esther, In Susa the citadel, the Jews have killed and destroyed 500 men and also the 10 sons of Haman. What would they have done with the rest of the king's provinces? Now what is your wish? It shall be granted you. And what further is your request? It shall be fulfilled. So we look a little further and we go down. We see that 75,000 of the non-Jews were killed. And the Feast of Purim is inaugurated. Verse 20, And Mordecai recorded these things and sent letters to the Jews who were in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus, both near and far, obliging them to keep the 14th day of the month of Adar and also the 15th day, the same year by which the Jews got relief from their enemies. So it was one of those, a lot of times you remember the feasts and it was to remember something.
Right.
Passover was to remember something. We partake of the Lord's Supper on the first day of every week, and it is to remember the sacrifice that Jesus made and the blood that was shed, and to reflect on ourselves.
Isn't it interesting, though, JJ, that this Feast of Purim is also, you know, that the pure fell, you know, the lot was cast against them. Now they're celebrating the day that the lot was cast against them, because it really wasn't against them. It was God turning that lot back towards the evil. And, you know, that Haman's, you know, dying on the gallows, and then his 10 sons also being hanged upon the gallows, the destruction of so many other enemies in conjunction with this. But verse 24 of chapter 9, you know, because Haman, the son of Hammedatha the Agagite, the enemy of all the Jews, had devised against the Jews to destroy them, and had cast Pur, that is, the lot, to consume them and to destroy them. But when Esther came before the king, he commanded by letters that the wicked device which he had devised against the Jews should return upon his own head, and that he and his sons should be hanged on the gallows. I just, you know, this is just interesting, what we call a turn of events. Mm-hmm. And the Jews ordained and took upon them and upon their seed and upon all which is joined them unto them, so as it should not fail that they would keep these 2 days according to their writing, according to the appointed time. Every year these days should be remembered and kept throughout their generation. Every family, every province, every city and that these days of Purim should not fail from among the Jews, nor from the memorial of them perish from their seed. In other words, you know, we've got to remember, we've got to remember. You know what feast we're still celebrating today?
What's that?
If you even want to call it a feast, but it is a memorial meal. Mm-hmm. Every first day of the week, we get together and we...
I don't know, I said that
like
5 minutes ago.
Well, that's thanks for reminding me again. But that the Lord's Supper, you know, is commemorated in a way, you know, we weren't really there. Mm-hmm. So our memory is just a historical acknowledgement.
Yeah.
All right.
To reflect, and that's what we end up seeing is for generations after the Passover and all that, they're able to look back and to see. And that's what they do with this as well, is look back on the way that God has blessed them.
This chapter ends with Mordecai's, or the book ends with like three verses. That's chapter 10. Mm-hmm. Mordecai's greatness. All the acts of his power and all of his might and the declaration of the greatness of Mordecai whereunto the king advanced him. Are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Media and Persia? For Mordecai the Jew was next to the king Ahasuerus, and great among the Jews, and accepted of the multitude of his brethren, seeking the wealth of his people and speaking peace to all of his seed.
Yep. Well, that was fun. I love the book of Esther. I know Chris was excited about the book of Esther today. We're so glad that you tuned in with us. Thank you for joining us. Have a great day, and remember,
we're proud of you.
You've been listening to Mornings for the Master on the Gospel Radio Network. Remember to join us each weekday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, or catch the replay at 9 p.m. Central Time. You can also contact us at mornings@tgrn.org if you have any questions we can help you with, or if you have events you would like to submit to our bulletin board, or just with general feedback about the program or network. We would love to hear from you. As we've had opportunity to spend time with the Master this morning in His Word, let's remember His words in Luke 6:46, when He said, "Why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" He goes on to say in verse 47 and 48, "Whosoever cometh to me and heareth my sayings and doeth them, I will show to you whom he is like. He is like a man which built an house and digged deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently upon that house and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock." Let's show the wisdom of that builder and go now to live for the Master.